Brian Medore, VOCM, here with John Efford, protest organizer of the past few weeks with the fishery at Confederation Building and other situations. John Efford, just give me some basic information. Where were you born, when, and where did you grow up?
I was born in Bairnead, which is a town on the Portagrave Peninsula, which basically borders with Portagrave. But usually anybody asks me where I'm from, I say Portagrave. Born in 1972 and grew up in Bairnead, Portagrave.
Just give me an idea now, growing up. What was it like? You're growing up in the shadows of a father who's pretty famous, is in the fishery, into politics, one of the most popular, if not the most popular, politicians in Newfoundland and Labrador for a while. What was that like?
It was different, but that was never a... I wouldn't say not that it was a concern, but I didn't hang my hat on that. I knew where he was, what he was doing, popularity and all that stuff that went along with it. But I was always under the assumption that I was going to do my own thing, and didn't and wasn't going to live my life on somebody else's coattails.
And when did you decide that your own thing was going to be the fishery? Was that earlier on, or did you dabble in some other things?
Yeah, no, that was very early on, and I can thank my father, actually, for getting me into the fishery. He was growing up. His sport, his entertainment, his spare time was on the water. He didn't hunt. He didn't go in the woods. He didn't moose hunt. It was... If it was hunting or fishing, it was always on the salt water. It was tur hunting, it was seal hunting, cod fishing. I mean, it was that was his sport, and dabbled into a little bit of commercial as well. I can remember being very young, tending salmon nets. His brother had a salmon license at the time, tending salmon nets with Dad in the early in the mornings, and squid fishing and that kind of stuff. But his entertainment was always his hobbies were always the salt water, and that's what started it, we'll say.
So when did you really get into it, say, okay, I'm going to buy my own boat, I'm going to be a full-time fisherman? When did you really dive into it head first?
You know, I started fishing when I was about 18 years old. I basically tripped around here and there, filling in for this one, filling in for that one, until I got a full-time job and probably, I'd say full-time position, or BERT we call it, when I was probably 19 years old. And wasn't very many years after that, probably a couple of years after that, I decided, well, this is what I'm going to do. This is what I'm going to stay doing. And if I'm going to stay doing it, I'm going to have my own. I started going to school, Marine Institute, getting tickets, captain's tickets. And that was probably 94, 95. I spent a couple of winters, say, doing fishing master's tickets, we'll say.
That's tricky territory, 94, 95, because in 92, of course, you all pretty much shut down. What was it like in around there, like trying to believe in yourself that, yeah, I'm going full-time into this?
Yeah, well, actually, basically, the first year that I was fishing was the year of the moratorium.
Wow.
That was the year I actually started full-time. That was the thing. Excuse me. And at the same time, the boat to be on was the boat that had crab license and the full-time crab license, and that's where I ended up getting to, and that's what started it all, because ground fish was, for all intents and purposes, cod was gone, so you had, basically at the time, you had crab and turbot, and I believe sometime in the mix there, scallop fishery as well, but crab is pretty much what sustained us.
Yeah, we remember the turbot wars in around that time, of course. What did you have to do? Did you have to go far afield to prosecute that fishery? Did you have to hire on a crew? Was that difficult? How did that all come to pass?
Oh no, at that time, and we're getting ahead of it. I'm getting ahead of myself now. That wasn't my own boat at that time. Okay. I didn't. It was years later before I got my own boat, and a lot of trials and tribulations to get there. But I spent 9 years years on deck of that boat. And then after those 9 years were up, I spent a year on another boat. And then basically I was trying to find and get my own. And it ended up being to the point where it was basically, you know, pretty much unobtainable to get out on your own. So what I did then in, I think it was 2000, I took a job. I got a skipper's job, we'll say. I ended up going to Conn River, and they were looking for captains and people to run their boats, and some mentoring there as well to get their people into the fishery. So that was where I started with running boats, and I did that up until 2000 and 2004, I left and I took a full-time crab berth in Bonavista as a skipper. And in 2010 is when I finally got my own. That I'm not running a boat for anyone else anymore. I'm getting my own. I managed to get my own and went from there.
So now you're making all the decisions, and that's, of course, people think that's the best place to be. But, boy, I was news director in my organization for a while, and it means a lot of extra time, extra hours, extra headaches, extra everything. How did that all come to be? Is that the place that you really wanted to be?
Oh, definitely. Oh, no, definitely. And it was never an issue that I used to say at one point, if someone will just put it in front of me, I'll do it. That's what I need. I got to get there. I got a lot of disappointments over the years. I mean, I was actively looking, trying to purchase an enterprise. Every time you get close, it'll be snatched out from under you by a processor. No going back at any point, any time. As I knew when I got to that position, I knew that I could make a go of it, because I just put my head down and let it go.
And has it been just the crab fishery, or do you go to other species?
Oh, geez, no, I've been crab, shrimp. Shrimp was big for when I started. Mm. I just had a small crab quota of 115,000 pounds, but I believe the first 2 years that I had my enterprise before I managed to buy more crab licenses. I think the first 2 years was 2.1, 2.2 million pounds of shrimp that I landed. And at the time, it was shrimp that did it for me. Crab, yes, was a great little boost to start, but it was that constant flow. Not great money, but it was a constant flow of money coming in from the time you finished the crab in the beginning of May until November every year. We were constantly busy. And also seals, turbot, tuna. Seals and tuna are two favorites of mine. Mm-hmm. I wish that I could make a living doing nothing else, but it's not. But it's two of my favorites. Codfish, we've been at codfish, you know. Tried a few other fisheries. Tried redfish. Tried hook and line cod out on the Virgin Rocks. And, you know, just find a whelk fishery. No. I 1 year I did, there was some signs of whelk around in our area in 3L, so I bought 500 pots, and we spent a bit of time at that, and soon realized that there's not enough of it here to make a trip out of them. So we sold the whelk pots and went on to something else.
I mean, out of all the species, though, the crab has to be the most difficult, just in terms of labor and physicality. It has to be the most difficult, is it?
I would say crab is probably one of the most laborious that you can do. But I mean, each fishery has its own challenges, and you know, do with your own personal stamina and that type of stuff. Like, one might be heavy lifting, one might be a lot more long hours. But I mean, there's a physical challenge to every fishery, but I would say probably crab is probably the most labor intensive while you're at it. So
now, I know there's always been disagreements in the crab fishery, but I don't recall it being, say, to the level it has been the past, I don't know, 3, 4, 5 years. It is just simply butting heads like I've never seen before, over price, over a lot of things. Was it like that in the crab fishery back in the 2000s when you really got your own boat and got into it hot and heavy?
Actually, the first year that I did have my own boat, it was 2010. Mm-hmm. There was a crab strike that year, and I managed. I left. I said, "Geez, I just got this. I cannot stay tied on. I got a payment coming up very soon." So I left from home and I fished as close as I could on our own border in my fishing area, the Nova Scotia. And I was heading across. I was going across the Gulf with the land of product in Nova Scotia. And before we left, we had a call from a processor here in Newfoundland who broke ranks, who was going to pay the price. And that's what we did. And shortly after that, it broke out.
Yeah, I know we had the raw material sharing dust up in around that time. Yeah. Danny Williams had, I think, just kind of brought that in overnight, unbeknownst to anyone. And it was hell to pay for quite some time before that government just said, okay, we're getting out of this altogether. But these protests we've had the last few years, holy cow, they've been intense.
Yeah. Well, I mean, I think RMS was 2005, 2007, somewhere around there anyway. And I mean, it was pretty resounding. The word that came back from fish harvesters here of what they thought of RMS. And it got shut down pretty fast.
It did.
And look, it's 2024, 20 years later, it was trying to be repeated again. But instead of being instated overnight, it got brought back to us now slowly over the past 2 or 3 years, to the point where I said, okay, boys, look, we're back here again. Let's get this fixed now, and let's get it fixed before it's too late.
I'm speaking with fishery protest organizer John Efford about his life in the fishery and how he has come to be the central figure in this whole fishery dispute, the crab fishery, with protests at Confederation Building. We'll be back right after this break.
Saturday morning, join us for the Irish Newfoundland Show. Send your request to irishnl@vocm.com or submit them online at vocm.com.
Welcome back. Speaking with John Efford, who's become the central figure, really, in the protests on the fishery. John, how did that come to pass? Because I covered all the protests last year, started right here at the FFAW building, went to the Hotel Newfoundland, Sheraton, if you will, went to DFO, and continued for quite some time, Confed building. Mm-hmm. And you weren't front and center then. It was kind of led by a group, so to speak. But you have taken over the lead this year and are really the central figure. How did that all come to pass anyway? I remember the first call to VOCM Open Line and hearing the name John Efford. And I said, well, obviously he knows the fishery. And I think the first story that anyone did with John Efford. Just kind of lead me through that whole process, how you became the leader.
By accident.
Yeah, I thought so.
By total accident. Not to say that I didn't mean for this to happen. Yes, I did, as much as every single fish harvester meant for this to happen. Myself, it was an accident. And again, I doesn't mean I didn't want this to happen. Yes, I did. And people ask me, you know, in recent days or in interviews, and you know, why did you do this? We had to. Had no choice. It just got to the point where it didn't seem like anything else was moving. We were getting hogtied. We were getting, for lack of better words, we were being abused. Our businesses are being taken from us. So it just got to the point where I didn't see it as picking up a torch to gain anything else but what we needed. And it wasn't me that started it. It was a group of us. I might have been the loudest voice that woke up a few sleepy people, we'll say. But, I mean, it was a group of us, and it was our 3L Small Supplementary Fleet meeting on I think it was the 4th of March. Mm-hmm. It's a long time. But, anyway, I think it was the 4th of March that we basically, boys, we got to go do this, and we got to do it now. And we left our meeting. We had a meeting in Whitburn in the Lions Club. There was 100 or so of us there. And we just went from there, and we went right to Confederation Building.
When you say you had to do it, is that akin to saying that you did it because the leadership in the FFAW didn't or wouldn't?
No, what I'm saying is it had to be done, so we did it. We did it. And, I mean, you know, there have been questions brought into it as to where the FFAW was on this. And, look, there's issues. The FFAW always represented both sides. I don't want to say both sides. They didn't represent the processors, but there was a plant worker issue that anything that we did would affect plant workers, and 100% it does. And until that problem was tabled and, you know, plant workers realized that, yeah, if you fellas go, we're gone too. We're with you. So therefore, it all came together. And we ended up being, I'm going to say, the most united group of fish harvesters in the history of Newfoundland that I know of.
It seemed to be like the union just had no choice. They had to join you because of your numbers, your intensity. Everything was right there. And it wasn't a case of your colleagues saying, well, there's no union member here, so, John, maybe you can address. It was like, he's our man. That is it. No one else is going to speak for us. It like, you're the chosen one.
Yeah, that's funny. Jeez. Yeah, that's a... No, I wouldn't say the chosen one, but I mean, look, where am I to today? I mean, we've been working side by side. Myself, I've spent more time with Jason Spingle in the past 2 to 3 weeks than I spent with my wife, and she's not very happy about that. But we're all in this together now. However we got here, doesn't matter. We're here. So, I mean, Greg, I spent 3 hours in the morning in Greg's office this morning with him. We're strategizing. I mean, and it's a common message. Nobody's fighting with anybody here as to what to do. We're just trying to figure out the best way to do it.
And it was a case, I think, just take me back through that meeting with Elvis Loveless. We thought, nah, they're not going to get an agreement now. It's going to be, you know, a couple of months after, maybe for next season or something like that. And then you emerged that day, that morning, later that morning, with the agreement that you were after on the four main points. Just walk me through that process. Did you expect an agreement that day?
Expectations weren't even there.
Yeah.
It was, no, we're having it. We're not going without it. There's no option. I mean, this is where we're to. We have no option left as fishermen. It wasn't a can we and we'll wait. It was, this is what we have to have to survive. And happened, didn't it?
Did it ever. Has it materialized to the point where everything is A-OK now?
Oh, well, no, look, it's not A-OK right now. We know what happened a few days ago, actually the same day that we actually walked out with their agreement. What happened that night with the price, with the panel decision. We don't understand why. We know it's wrong. There's a few issues there that some people say you got let out the front door so they could get behind you through the back door. Look, we're dealing with that now. We're going to deal with it. And look, I made this quite clear to everybody when this started. You know, we're going in the right direction. I mean, the government is talking. The government is sees the problem. The government is addressing the problem. Is this all going to be done tonight that we are fixed forever? No, there's going to be maintenance along the way. And I'm looking at this now as some maintenance.
I think a lot of people were of the understanding when you did have that agreement that that was going to be the fix-all. Mm-hmm. But now you're... Well, you were speaking yesterday about not going out on the water next week because it's just not economical for you. So people are puzzled. But what is the situation? Do you know if there will be a crab fishery next week?
Oh, I can't speak as to when the crab fishery is going to open. But what I can speak to is that the crab fishery will open when we have a system in place. That's fair, not one-sided, fair. And part of that is to make sure that we are going to continue to capture our fair share of the market.
So this sounds a lot like last year.
Nope, different than last year. totally different than last year. We've made some great inroads now with the provincial government. We got infrastructure now put in place to create competition. Last year, basically, we ended up, I'm not going to say we gave up or gave in, but the way it went last year was wrong. It ended up, I'm not going to say it was done wrong, it was the wrong result. To what we achieved, to what we wanted to achieve this year, we're getting results. And again, like, this is the last year. If we go through another year of bankruptcies and companies, corporate control getting stronger, there won't be enough of us left next year. So this, everybody realizes that this is the last year. We have to fix this year. Otherwise, there'll be no future.
So you say you're getting results. Is that from within Newfoundland processors here, or is that from outside Newfoundland with processors offering or expressing interest to buy at a higher price here?
And again, this is where we'll go back to what we've been fighting for within free enterprise. Right now with free enterprise, we have the option to speak to the outside buyers to let's see what's there, to Nova Scotia, Quebec, PEI, where, I mean, New Brunswick, wherever. Excuse me. If there's a buyer there willing to buy our product and tell us a price. Therefore, we're creating competition. And whether or not we sell to outside buyer or not is really immaterial, because once you create the competition, everyone has to follow suit. And a buyer from Nova Scotia is not going to offer you a price for them to go bankrupt. Mm. So therefore, if they're not going to offer you a price to go bankrupt, the prices here should be similar to the same.
And when you're talking about crab now, it doesn't really have the shelf life of some of the other species. Is that an issue for getting outside buyers to purchase your product?
Well, with any fishery or with the crab fishery, I'll just use the crab fishery, the length of time that you fish, the length of time that your first product went aboard your boat to when it's expected to be produced, well, is always a concern. I mean, I fished a full-time crab license for a few years and on my own, and I mean, we were fishing, I mean, there's times we're 40-hour steam away, and when the crab got scarce, it's like, okay, now you're scratching your head to where, can I fish for 3 days and still be able to make it in and all the product be good, or can I fish for 4 days? So that's always a concern. But you do everything in a timely manner, and now a lot of our boats now are refrigerated seawater, so actually your first crab coming aboard is basically when you hit the wharf. I'm not RSW, so I don't have refrigerated seawater, so my first crab coming aboard as soon as it comes aboard the boat. So if you're bringing a crab in and landing to the wharf with RSW and basically, you're basically taking the crab out of the ocean then. So you've got a longer time. But, I mean, it's been done. There's crab brought. It's been brought into the island. I mean, over the years.
Oh, yes.
So if it's brought in from the maritime provinces, we can put it out. And you just have to be mindful of the time constraints that you have, that, okay, you do know that you're going to have probably a 24-hour window to 24 to 36-hour window from the time you hit the wharf till it hits the processing plant, we'll say Nova Scotia, New Brunswick, or Quebec.
What's in the political cards for John Effort? I know you've been asked this many times on the open lines and the interviews and wherever you've gone. What's in the political offing for John Effort, or is it just simply on the water, nowhere else?
Now, someone asked me yesterday if I was considering running, and I said, yes, I am going to run right to the boat.
That's your final answer.
That's it.
John Effort, thanks very much for this. Good luck on the fishery. I hope things do go a little better than last year.
They will.
Good to hear. Thanks.